Hello and welcome to Travel Genius. I'm Mark Elwood.
And I'm Nikki Eckstein. We're the Travel Geniuses.
Yes, we are. This week, we will be talking about something that's really boring, but really important: insurance. So bear with us. I promise you will be glad that you've listened to it.
Plus, we'll be joined by Jessica Nabongo, better known as the Catch Me If You Can, a globe-trotting Instagrammer and travel specialist who's currently on a mission to be the first Black woman to travel to every country in the world.
That's coming up on Travel Genius. Okay, I'm going to say the word insurance, and I know everyone is already falling asleep, but bear with me because you're going to be so glad you listened to this. It is really boring, but really important to think about travel insurance of all kinds. What's going on in the Senate, Nikki, that people might have heard of?
So there's a Democratic faction in the U.S. Senate that earlier this year introduced a bill that basically brings up something super important that I think all of us have intuited, at least in some way, shape or form, for a long time. Here's the gist. You know, when you're shopping for airfare and you're on Expedia or Orbitz or whatever, and you get to the checkout and there's that box where you have to say that you're not going to buy travel insurance in conjunction with this airfare ticket. Well, they tend to prompt you again and again and say, are you sure you don't want travel insurance? We've all been there and we've all said no. And the Senate, they kind of want to say we shouldn't even be getting these ads because guess what? The travel insurance policies that these sites are selling us, they're total bunk. They don't cover anything.
Like what? Like what don't they cover?
So the whole reason that you'd get travel insurance is, God forbid, you get sick ahead of a trip, right? That's probably the main driver for people buying travel insurance. Guess what? A lot of these travel insurance policies wouldn't even bat an eye before denying you coverage for getting sick ahead of your trip and needing to cancel. But that's not even the most egregious thing to me. It's like if your flight's canceled, if you have an emergency, if terrorism happens, most of these insurance policies will do flat out nothing for you. And that's where the problem lies.
So we're saying you shouldn't have that kind of insurance because that kind of insurance is essentially BS. You're paying for nothing. It's just guilt tripping you into buying it at the 11th hour. But you should have insurance. I'm always staggered when people say to me, oh, I travel without insurance.
Well, here's the thing. Most people don't travel without insurance, whether they know it or not. One thing that I tell people is that you always have to look at your credit card terms because I, for instance, carry a Barclay card that de facto gives me travel insurance wherever I go. So I think a lot of people just don't look at the fine print of their credit cards. Most cards, whether it's Chase or American Express or other primary cards that have popular travel benefits, they all have some kind of contingency for travel insurance. You just need to know what it is.
Exactly. So in other words, pay for your trips. Always pay for a trip on a credit card, not direct debit, nothing like that. Pay for it using one of those credit cards and you might have baked in insurance. The one thing I would encourage people to realize is that when there are major problems, like hurricanes, those kind of things, travel insurance, even conventional travel insurance that we love, often comes up short.
Absolutely.
I learned this firsthand. I was going to a wedding last September in St. Martin, and that wedding was the week that Hurricane Irma hit the island. And unfortunately, the wedding was not cancelled, and a few guests had arrived early and got marooned on the island.
My jaw actually hit the table that wedding wasn't canceled. So are you serious?
That's an entirely other story that the wedding was not canceled and the wedding did take place in the wake of the hurricane.
Did you go?
Whoever was around. No, because I wasn't going to put myself in harm's way, but a few guests had made a week of it and were stuck there during a Category 5 hurricane and then for the 3 or 4 days afterwards. But as we looked at the travel insurance's ability to get people out of there, it offered you $1,500 evacuation money, which is really like a tip for the plane if you get a plane to come get you.
That just seems like a bad joke because planes couldn't even land at that point. So you were getting airlifted by specialty vehicles, essentially, whether it was a cruise boat or, you know, a helicopter or private jet by many circumstances, because nothing else was available.
The American government did send a plane, and I know some other people who were on the French side of the island who got taken home by the American government. But I love there's a new app called Close Circle. and it is essentially an emergency response app. It's run by a company called Drum Cusack, which offers corporate security. So big firms that need to take care of their staff when they're sent around the world will hire Drum to monitor them. And they have launched a consumer version that essentially keeps tabs on you. They can see you. They've got a big board at their headquarters in London, literally with a little beeper. And the app uses almost no battery. It's been designed very cleverly to not drain your battery. And they will both evacuate you for free if it's deemed necessary. They will send you alerts of things that are happening nearby via email and text. They will essentially act as your own personal emergency response team.
So basically, you'll be as important as Bill Gates getting evac'd out of whatever island you're marooned on for the price of what, Mark?
It's per person. It's about $225
That's
a year.
That's not bad.
Which I think is amazing. If you're traveling, especially to unusual destinations, adding on $225 to a big trip cost, if you're going on a bucket list trip to a far-flung destination, I think the peace of mind that gives you is amazing.
So I have a couple of tips that I really like in terms of travel insurance where it's similar. It's a very small upfront cost and the ultimate payoff can be huge. I think my favorite one out of all of them is a service called AirCare. Have you heard of this?
I have, but I'm always so suspicious of services that make you pay for one particular kind of coverage.
I totally get that, but this one is worth your salt. I'll tell you why. It's a service run by Berkshire Hathaway, which obviously is a very well-known and very reputable company. And this product is specifically for your flight. So you're getting travel insurance, not for your entire vacation, just for your flight. The service starts at $34, which is really nothing. It's what you pay in taxes or less than that for a lot of flights. And for that cost, AirCare will reimburse you for anything from a flight delay to lost luggage to a cancellation. And it happens instantly. Serious. Your flight is delayed 2 hours, boom, $50 go in your bank account, just like that. Mm-hmm. If you lose your luggage, it's $1,000 if you're traveling internationally. It's pretty generous, actually.
So what's the catch?
The catch is that most times nothing goes wrong, which is the catch with all insurance, as it would be. But honestly, it's a fair product, and that's what makes it so rare. But I have to say it's not alone. There's another company called AirHelp that I really like. And this one, you don't even have to pay for it up front. It just litigates for consumer rights, mostly in the EU, because the EU has more generous consumer protection rules and regulations. So if your flight is delayed there, you're actually able to get compensation a lot more easily than if your flight's delayed in the US. And AirHelp has a very simple premise. They'll litigate on your behalf and just take a small cut out of whatever they get you. And they've gotten people up to $800 worth for something as simple as a flight delay or cancellation. So that's a really good one to
know. So you have to pray for a delay on your way home, not on your way out. So you go to Paris for the weekend and you think, if I have a delay, please make sure it's a delay in the EU.
Yeah.
Because I'll make more money out of it.
Yeah, let it extend your vacation too. It's best of all worlds.
You're praying for delays. You know, I know who won't be praying for delays because she is traveling at a breakneck speed. And that is our guest today, Jessica Nabongo, who was born and raised in Detroit after her parents immigrated there from Uganda. But she really basically calls her suitcase home right now.
She's lived across the world, everywhere from Japan to rural Benin. And she turned that firsthand experience not only into a major presence on Instagram, but into a business. It's called Jet Black, and it's a boutique travel company that focuses on encouraging tourism to Africa from within the African diaspora. If that wasn't enough, she's currently aiming to be the first woman of color to travel to every single country in the world, and she's making a documentary about her journey.
So no big deal. I mean, she's got a few free minutes. Thankfully, we did manage to pin her down on a rare day in New York City. She's currently at 143 countries, about 50 more to go, and she just got back from Papua New Guinea. So let's bring her in.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Travel Genius.
And before we dive in, we have one little procedural rule you're going to need to know. Since you're on Travel Genius, we're hoping to get some really genius tips from you. And whenever we get one, you will hear this sound. Thank you, Nikki.
Ooh, yay. No pressure for you, of course, Jessica. None at all. But we're going to be tallying your genius score at the end of the episode.
Okay.
So, first question. I know you're a big Africa specialist. Give us some tips that are for someone who wants to go above and beyond a classic safari to Africa, where should they go? What do people overlook? What regions are easier to visit? Excite people about Africa and say, not just safari, there's more to do.
Absolutely. And thank you for that question, because I always am encouraging people to think about Africa more as visiting cities, visiting beaches. So in terms of cities, some of my favorite cities to visit for cuisine, for art, for culture are Nairobi, Lagos, which might be tough for a first timer, so maybe not your first trip to the continent. Dakar has a really great art event every 2 years in May called Dakart. That's really, really incredible. In terms of beaches, Zanzibar has some of the best beaches I've seen in the world. And that's after going to over 143 territories and countries.
No big deal.
Right? Tunisia is also amazing. I think a lot of times when people think of Africa, they're thinking of sub-Saharan. But North Africa, of course, has a lot to offer in terms of culture, beaches, and things of that nature. Obviously, Morocco is well visited by a lot of people. Marrakesh has amazing shopping. If you're into that, you can get tons of great textiles, blankets and rugs and those beautiful little poofs that are great accents in any room.
West Africa, I think this is I was stunned by this when I first read it. For an East Coast American, mm-hmm. West Africa is as close as London or Paris,
yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Dakar and Accra. And Delta from New York City, Delta has nonstop flights, which is awesome.
So you could go for the weekend?
Yes. Well, long weekend. Let's do at least 4 days.
I've heard the beaches in Senegal actually are really incredible, which is kind of random. When I heard that for the first time, I didn't believe it.
Yeah, I definitely prefer East African beaches. I'm biased. I'm Ugandan. But what I love about the beaches in Senegal is the surf culture.
There you go.
And that's something that people don't think about. And so, yeah, actually, I took a group of clients to Dakar, and one of the activities we did was surf lessons.
I love that you mentioned Tunisia as well, because every year here at Bloomberg, we compile a list of destinations that we think are going to be particularly exciting in the year ahead. So in our Where to Go for 2018 list, we actually put Tunisia there. Something that I learned while we were putting that article together was that it's one of the places where Star Wars shot.
Yes.
It's kind of, you know, desert moonscape type scenes.
Is it?
Very iconic landscapes that you just never knew how to place them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that a lot of luxury hoteliers are investing there. So if you want to stay somewhere fancy, you know, they have those accommodations for you. Four Seasons, for example, has a gorgeous retreat that just opened there.
So tell me about how claiming something is camera equipment is a sort of naughty way of making sure you never check a bag again.
It's funny because actually in Tunisia, I had to talk to three people when I was using this little trick. So everyone loves to travel with carry-on only, not because of the extra fees, of course, but just because of the simplicity of getting off of the plane and being able to just leave the airport straight away. So usually I try to avoid having my bag weighed, but in the event they weigh it, I'm like, oh, it's full of camera equipment. I can't check it. And usually airlines will say, okay, that's fine. In Tunisia, they challenged me. And I said, look, if you're willing to insure it for $5,000, I will check it. And of course, at that point, they're like, just take the bag with you. Emirates.
I thought that was, you see, I was waiting for Nikki to ding
yes.
on that.
I didn't want to cut you off, but that is genius.
Yes. And I mean, usually, well, now I travel with my drone and I travel with some pretty heavy duty
equipment. So it is legit.
Yeah. Now, is most of it equipment? No. But some of it is.
How you carry a drone, camera, lenses, and all your stuff in a carry-on, by the way, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I've got it down. On my Instagram, about once a month, I do a little series called Packing with Jessica. But I'm traveling usually for at least 4 weeks, and I only take a carry-on and like a
shoulder
bag.
Do you roll, fold, or bundle?
I fold, but I use these handy dandy packing cubes from Flight One, which are, I personally think, the best thing ever created for travel.
Why the Flight One cubes? What makes those your favorite?
Because they compress. So a lot of packing cubes are just about separating your clothes and things, but these specifically are also about compression. And they're double-sided. So one side is for laundry and one side is for clean. So instead of a lot of people will just use a plastic bag and then you just have your dirty clothes in a plastic bag, which I don't particularly like. But with these bags, you can have your clothes on both sides of the bag.
Ooh, that's clever.
Yeah. No bell.
Nope. I thought about it.
You see, I think Nikki's teasing you now. She's putting her finger above
I'm
it.
I'm like,
and she's just,
okay. How can I do it? Okay.
Jessica, there's a lot of hoopla right now about what places are safe to visit. Right this minute, we're dealing with a lot of news stories about gang violence in Mexico, and the travel department has issued some State Department warnings about Mexico, of all places, our neighbor, a place that we all love to go to as a very easy kind of weekend destination. And I know for you, checking countries off of your very, very, very long list has kind of no room for these types of things. But what do you do? I mean, you're off to Beirut next. How do you decide when a place is safe? And how do you kind of navigate those issues as you travel throughout these parts of the world that are less visited?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think every country in the world has safe places and dangerous places. I was just in Afghanistan in June, had an absolutely amazing time. And basically what I try to do before I go to countries that might be a little more unsafe than others is that I reach out to local tour guides. I usually will try to reach out to the tourism board. Obviously, some countries don't have them because they barely have governments. But usually because of my reach on social media, I just ask my followers, hey, is anyone here? Is anyone there? And I can always get connected to people in these different countries. So I don't really concern myself with that probably as much as other people. But also because I've been to so many countries, I know that pretty generally everything is safe. And like, honestly, if something happens to you, it's just really bad luck, you know?
I think that's true almost anywhere you go. One of the funny things about these stories that I've been reading about travel warnings is that, okay, so like we said, the U.S. has a travel warning on Mexico right now. China has a travel warning on the U.S. right now. So you have to wonder how these things even come to be in the first place and how politically driven they
exactly.
can be.
Whenever you hear about a travel warning, I always think, whose sister's friend is in charge of that tourism company in that country? You know.
But at the same time, Afghanistan, that's next level.
Yeah. So about 35% of the country is controlled by the government and is safe and stable. And so I went to part of that 35% of the country. So I actually visited Mazar-e Sharif, which is in the north of the country. And I crossed in from Uzbekistan and it was perfectly safe. I never felt unsafe for a second while I was there. And actually, it's so unfortunate what's happening because Afghanistan is so beautiful. Some of the most amazing mosques that I've ever seen in my life. So hopefully things will settle down soon and people will be able to go explore the country again.
I'm curious, tell me, you've been on this epic journey around the world. You're hoping to be the first woman of color to visit every country in the world.
Almost.
Tell me what you wish you had known at the beginning that you would tell someone else thinking about doing an epic journey like this.
So when I decided that I wanted to be the first Black woman to get to every country in the world, I was already at 60 countries on 6 continents. So I would suggest if somebody is doing it, like finish all of the countries in one region first or on one continent. Because for me now I'm playing a game of pickup where I just have, oh, there's one country here, 3 there. And so instead of like doing a road trip to do all of the countries that are bordering each other, I'm like, I have to fly from here all the way down there. And so unfortunately, it's not as easy as if I started from scratch.
So what are some of the places that are left on your list?
Some of the ones that I'm most excited about are Iran, Mali. Super excited to get to Jordan, which is I'm going there next week.
Also on our list, by the way.
Oh, yay. Yeah. I have to check out this list.
You have to check out this list.
In Myanmar, which is one of these places where kind of unstable at the moment. So definitely have to figure out how to navigate traveling to Myanmar now.
I've been there and I can definitely say, like you said, it is a place where having a local in your back pocket figuratively is very helpful. Language gaps can be very confusing in Myanmar. It is similar to India or even Italy. It's a country that's been stitched together out of a lot of separate provinces that somebody just kind of decided one day should all be unified as a single country.
I think you mean the British. It's okay. You can say that.
But in Myanmar, unlike some of these other places, there isn't a common language that emerged after unification. So every province still speaks its native tongue, and it can be really challenging for visitors if you don't have a guide. But it's beautiful, beautiful, spectacular. You'll love it.
So I want to ask you another question. Tell me about the rainy season rule. Why do you say travel when the weather's bad? Because that sounds so counterintuitive.
Right. So I always travel at the tail end of rainy season. So definitely not in the middle. But if you travel at the tail end of rainy season, you're going to have less crowds, which means less people in your pictures. And you're also going to pay less for your accommodations. You're going to pay less for your tours because there's not a high rate of tourism. They're looking to give discounts to encourage people to travel.
Just waiting for you to finish there, but rainy season is a brilliant tip. Actually, I think it's fascinating because we talk a lot about shoulder season, right? And that's a totally different term, but kind of means a similar thing.
Yeah, for
where
sure.
In between your summer and winter, your peak season and low season, there's always this kind of narrow window where there's one little caveat, but otherwise it's perfect and nobody thinks to go then, and you get much better prices. And it's a great experience. I went to Peru right as rainy season was beginning. And everybody says, don't do it because Machu Picchu in the mud ain't fun.
Right.
Exactly. Ugh. But it was fantastic because how else do you get a site like that all to yourself? And we did. So your tip is spot on. I can vouch for it.
Yes. I will say my birthday is in early February and I love going to Venice because it's carnival. But even though it's carnival, it's empty. No one goes and it's wet. And Venice in the rain, they give you these giant galoshes to wade through the water and you're 5 years old again. It is literally my favorite thing. Jessica, give us some tips about taking great vacation photos. Obviously, you take beautiful pictures on Instagram. What are the three things that people can learn from you, or the secrets to you taking great pictures?
Number one, find the light. I think that's one thing people don't consciously think about. Even if I'm indoors, no matter where I am, I'm trying to find, even if it's a little sliver of light, find that light and make sure the light is facing your subject. That changes everything in terms of, like, obviously the beauty of the image, but even how you're able to process it in post if you do any editing work. Number two, I would say be creative. So I personally, when I went to Machu Picchu, I just felt a little disappointed because I had seen the same exact pictures all of the time. And you know, so it was like when I got there, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this place about a million times before.
Oh, so over this.
Exactly. So even like when I went to Machu Picchu, I found like a little corner that I hadn't seen photographed before because it gets boring, right? I don't know if you've seen, but there's a video on YouTube where it's like all of these images taken from Instagram.
Oh,
of different,
I've seen that.
And it's like
it's like
all
it's time
the exact
lapse, except it's the same
pictures.
Thing.
Pictures. Exactly. Yeah. So definitely get creative. Even if you're in places that have been photographed several trillion times, just try to find a little corner to be creative. And my thing, what I love is just wearing bright clothing, bright lipstick. That's sort of my signature.
Pop of color.
Yes, a pop of color.
Brighten it up even if the sky's gray.
Exactly.
I love it.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, bright colors on camera do pop much more. No blacks, no whites, because they photograph very flat. And bright primary colors will always grab attention.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to say, because a lot of people ask me, oh, well, what camera should I buy? Honestly, if you're not a professional photographer, I wouldn't suggest spending like $3,000 to $4,000 on a body and like really great lenses. Camera phones are amazing. A lot of my pictures I take on my iPhone 7 Plus. Just clean your lens before you take a picture. I beg. Please
clean
it.
Nobody needs to see the grime and the haze that comes from it, for
sure. I'm cleaning my phone right now. I'm just like, I feel really ashamed. I feel busted with a dirty phone.
Jessica, something that I'm really curious about. So authenticity is such a big buzzword in travel, but I feel like you have a really interesting perspective and you probably have a great inside scoop on how you interact with people who belong to a local culture. Especially, I think, in places like Africa, where you really want to understand the differences and the similarities in a local lifestyle and bridge, you know, kind of bridge the boundaries a little bit that way. What is your recommendation for tapping into an authentic local experience without having to feel that like gross commodification of someone else's lifestyle afterwards, that Disneyification?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think number one, don't go into a place and think of them as the other. Mm-hmm. So I think we can't other people. So no matter where I am, if I'm in Uzbekistan or if I'm in Namibia or if I'm in Suriname, I think of the person that I'm talking to as just another person who may speak another language, who happens to live in a different place. But I'm trying to just get to know them as another human being. And I ask questions as opposed to making assumptions. So, you know, we may say, oh, is this what this is like? rather than saying, what is this like? And I think that really changes it. It really shows people that you're open to listen and to learn, and not that you're coming there with all of your preconceived notions and trying to have your preconceived notions confirmed. You're actually there to learn from them.
I really like that.
Jessica just shook her hand in the air with like excitement.
Number three.
I will say, I agree with you. I always think as a journalist, my job is to be professionally stupid so that my readers don't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I should ask all the dumb questions and not pretend to know anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you are amazed how much you learn when you admit you know nothing. Mm-hmm. You learn things you had no idea you didn't know.
Yeah,
so I love that. That's a great.
And it shows people that you respect them and that you truly are interested in what they're in learning about their culture.
I want to know a trip that really changed your life and what you learned from it. What was the single thing that maybe turned you into a professional traveler? I mean, you travel for a living the way we do. What was the trip that made that happen?
I think actually it was when I was living in London. So I did my master's in London and I spent about 10 months in the city. And we all know traveling in Europe is super cheap. And during that year, I think I visited like 10 countries between Europe and Northern Africa. And just how accessible it felt to me and how easy it felt, I think that's what really confirmed for me that I could get to see everything that I wanted to see in the world. A lot of people say, well, how do I get started? And I'm always like, just buy a plane ticket. It wasn't, you know, it sounds crazy, but that's what it is. You just have to buy a plane ticket and just go. Sometimes that means you can't wait for somebody else to go with you. You have to just go out and see the world.
You've taken a lot of these trips alone.
Mm-hmm.
And as a woman traveling alone, what advice would you give other women who might want to travel alone but find it? I think there's an extra step of intimidation often for women traveling alone versus even men. How would you reassure people or give people advice to take that leap?
Yeah, again, I just want to reiterate that most of the world is safe. I think, you know, the news, Twitter, everything has us thinking that, oh, everybody hates each other. Everywhere outside of the U.S. is in civil war. But honestly, most of the world is really, really safe. So that should be the first point of like bringing people, like reducing that fear. But there's just a couple of things that I try to be aware of. Sometimes I stay in Airbnbs when I'm traveling alone. But if it's a country where maybe I'm a little bit uneasy, then I'll stay in a hotel, because then I know there's 24-hour staff. If anything, I know I can run into the front door and hopefully the door will close behind me and they can save me if anything happens. You know, I don't take public transportation at night. If I'm really unfamiliar with a city, I'll take an Uber or a taxi. So, you know, just little tiny adjustments. I think the other thing is for women who are traveling alone, confidence is key. So, and how can you build confidence? You have to feel comfortable. So if you're looking for a country to go to, you know, it should be somewhere where you feel comfortable, because if you're comfortable, you're confident, and then you don't look vulnerable. So that's a really, really important
mindset
piece. Yeah.
Interesting. I was given a piece of advice about how to passively display confidence when you're somewhere you feel a little bit of out of context, which is buy a local newspaper and stick it under your arm. Because even if you don't speak the language, you will read as someone who does. And that instantly makes you local.
Mark, I'm giving you a ding.
Thank you.
That was good. I love that.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Because it's a way of defending yourself that isn't aggressive.
Mm.
And it makes you blend in. Even in cultures where you might be ethnically very different, if you've got the newspaper, it says, oh, you look different, but you've lived here.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe your wife or husband is from here. So that's my little.
I love that.
Genius.
Yeah, I'm like, I love that.
So Jessica, you've been to how many countries now?
I have been to 134 UN member countries and 9 territories.
134 countries. Clearly, you're not going back to these places until you check all the rest of them off your list. But if there was one that you could go back to before you hit all the other ones, where would you be racing?
Ooh. Okay, so I'm flirting with the idea of going back to Sudan again in December.
Sudan?
Yes. Oh my gosh. So as you can imagine, traveling all of the time, it's a little hard for me to be impressed now, which is unfortunate. But in Sudan, number one, Sudan has more pyramids than Egypt.
I knew that actually.
And they're older. And so I was in Sudan with a bunch of my Sudanese friends for Christmas, and we went to the pyramids and we went to some other very, very old ruins, and there was no one there.
Oh, how beautiful.
There was no ticket booth.
Mm.
There was no gate. And it blew my mind because I'm sitting there and I'm like, look at these ancient ruins. And there's no one else here but me and my friends. It was the most amazing thing.
And are they kept safe? My question would be, if they're not monitored in some way, are they vandalized? Are they badly graffitied?
No.
Or does the local culture seem respectful towards
them? They're definitely off the beaten path. So people don't live anywhere near them. So there's definitely no vandalization. And yeah, they're being pretty well maintained. I mean, I was blown away because it, you know, we drive there and it's just there and there's no one there. It's just these amazing pyramids and these ancient ruins. And it was phenomenal.
What are they called? If people want to look these up.
The pyramids in Meroe, M-E-R-O-E.
We have actually written about it
at
Bloomberg. And I know two different operators that will take people there if you're interested in doing that. There's a company called ITC Sudan, just the letters ITC Sudan, that is very reputable and specializes specifically on that country. And then there's a safari specialist, actually, that's broadened their focus a bit called the Explorations Company that has a founder who's very passionate about these types of destinations that are a little bit outside of people's typical comfort zones. And she is pretty big on Sudan. So both of those companies, I think, are great people to call if it's something that you want to do.
Yeah. And the other great thing about Sudan, beyond the pyramids, you also have both Niles. So the Niles, the Blue Nile and the White Nile converge in Khartoum. And then also you have the Red Sea where you can go diving on the coast. So you could really spend 2 weeks in Sudan and just get so much. And the food is good.
And on that note, I think we should probably let you get to your next country. That was
a
blast.
Thank you so much.
Where are you going? Where is your next trip? What's your next trip consist of?
So I am off to Lebanon, Cyprus, Israel, Palestine, Jordan, and Kuwait.
In how many days?
I was just thinking, how many days?
It's about 3 weeks.
Okay. That still seems a little intense.
It's intense.
Those are some amazing destinations.
Yeah, super excited.
And after that, where's the next bunch of countries you think you're going to tackle?
Probably going to head back to the South Pacific before cyclone season. Yeah, so I still have New Zealand, Palau, Micronesia, Tuvalu, Tonga, and Vanuatu. So I need to get back over there.
Places where your rainy season rule does not go into effect.
Right. Exactly. I don't want to get caught in a cyclone.
Do you know what your last... Have you decided what you want your last country to be? The place that...
Yes.
Which one is it going to be?
The Seychelles. Yes, there's going to be a big party. You guys should come.
Please tell me you're taking out North Island.
No.
Then I'm coming.
If you pay for that, we'll go.
She's really hard to impress.
North Island, okay.
And anyway, if people want to follow your travels, Jessica, if they want to catch you, as we would say, where can they find you? What are all your handles?
Yes, you can find me on my blog, Instagram and Facebook, The Catch Me If You Can. And on Twitter, I am the CMIYC.
Thank you so much and good luck. Safe travels.
Thank you.
So, okay, Nikki. Give us the tally. How did Jessica score?
Jessica did very well. She got 3 points. One for telling people that she's got camera equipment in her carry-on bag and never being willing to check it. Two for always traveling during the just-so-slightly rainy season. And three for always framing questions with locals to be about curiosity rather than about your personal assumptions, which I thought was really insightful and genius.
I definitely want her to plan my next trip to Africa. I love her insider knowledge on that continent.
This has been another episode of Travel Genius. I'm Nikki Eckstein.
And I'm Mark Elwood. Do you have a favorite travel tip or hack? Or do you have thoughts on one of the tips we discussed today? Please let us know.
You can call us at 646-324-3490. And maybe we'll even play your tip on the show. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Nikki Eckstein with 3 Ks and no Cs.
And I'm at Mark J. Elwood with a K and 2 Ls. And remember, that's 646-324-3490. And if you are a fan of Travel Genius, I hope you are, please take a moment to rate and review us. It really helps new listeners find us.
This episode was produced by Topher Forges. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.